Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report, closing out the week as we always do with two things: the taking out of the trash, a very ceremonial process, and the bringing in of the Brett, something I would say equal in pomp and circumstance. Brett, how you doing?
What did I say to you before, John?
You said a lot of stuff. I don't
circumstance
know.
Is fine. Circumstance I can get behind, but this is a no pomp zone. I gotta kibosh the pomp, John.
I feel like between me and you, who is more predisposed to pomp? I think it's Brett. I'm not saying Brett's overly pomp, but he's pomp-ish.
I'll allow this because your evidence is circumstantial.
which we're okay with again.
Which, as I said earlier,
said. Anyway, let's get a poll up on Twitch. Are you in favor of pomp or circumstance or both? Can you go either way? Anyway, Brett, thank you for being here. We've got a weird rundown. It's a weird day in the news, but I'm excited for it because we're gonna go through it together. Thank you, everybody out there in the audience. Appreciate you being here. Please hit the like button while there's still time. It could disappear at any moment. And yeah, we're gonna go through a whole bunch of stuff. At the end, we're gonna throw out the trash, so definitely don't go anywhere before that. And as we go through, you can send us comments, tweets, super chats, all of that. And we'll do our best to get to as many as we can.
Polls up in real time.
Poll is already up. Okay, I get pomp. I don't know what could happen with circumstance, so I'm going with the pomp. But anyway, we're gonna see what we'll touch base with a very important poll soon. But with that, Brett, are you good to go?
I will say pomp is way funnier to say than most words, it's including slightly, circumstance.
Yes.
But there will be tons of pomp later on Common Room tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, when we welcome guests, the Brooke Marks. And not because I didn't plan anything this week, that was last week. Mm-hmm. This week we will also be joined by two people who talk to each other on Twitch a lot and have a great rapport in their respective chats, but Ariana Vega and Jordan Yule will be in the Common Room tonight.
Very cool.
Answering questions I selected at about 2:15 a.m. last night because I couldn't sleep. So I don't remember them, but I remember being very happy about them. We'll see how that turns out. Nice.
Good. Well, then you'll get to experience them for the first time as everyone. Anyway, before we jump into our prepared news, I wanted to briefly mention the fact, and I tweeted a lot about this yesterday, but that Jessica Walter had passed, the actress. And I bring this up mainly because it would be enough that she was an important character in two of my favorite shows of all time. But I know that Brett also has very much loved her performances for a long time. And so it's not like we have a ton to say. It's just really sad. She had an incredibly long, successful career. She was one of like the most naturally funny people, I think, ever. And in a way that like you don't really think about. Like if you'd asked me who are your 10 favorite comedians or whatever, or comic actors, I wouldn't have thought of her, but she totally should be on the list. I don't know, Brett, what did you think when you saw that?
Yes. In our house, there are many references to Mallory Archer slash Lucille Bluth. And one of them is whenever I go somewhere, I'm like, babe, is it cool if I leave you here? And she just goes, mama, da-da-da, mama, da-da-da. And that's Lucille being happy when she can drink martinis at home alone. Like that is a total mood. and then frequently when I'm done with work, when I'm done with work for the day, I'll just go, I have no more love to give today.
Oh, just so many good lines, so many. And you know what, it bothered me a little bit. Like, so you know, everybody's like looking back on our work and they're quoting our lines and everything. And I feel like 99% of it was Lucille Bluth, which I get. Lucille Bluth is awesome. But like Mallory Archer is awesome too. And I feel like so many people don't know about that. Like if you like Lucille Bluth, they're very similar characters. You could get way more. There's more Mallory Archer than there ever was Lucille Bluth. So if you were a fan of her, go watch Archer. It's totally awesome and she's a great part of it.
Yeah, and so they've lost two voice actors on Archer because Woodhouse, the guy who voiced Woodhouse, died. And that is very sad. But it's one of those things where it's very difficult at all times to frame tragedy in a way that you can feel good about, obviously. But that is an instinct that I think a lot of people have. And particularly in therapy, they go like, is there another way we can think about this so it isn't so sad or frustrating at the time, because you can't change the original circumstance. And in this situation, the way I think about it is like, we loved Lucille Bluth. And the thing about our Arrested Development is it was gone too soon, it was canceled too soon. But we still got to enjoy that something very similar for years and years. Like, what, 12, 8, 9, 10 seasons? And I think it might be on the 11th or 12th now. But yeah, that is something that's very cool and rare that you get something like that where brilliant creative minds who created Archer were like, I love Jessica Walter and like what she did there. I love it so much that we need a place for it somewhere in what most comedians agree is like top comedy.
Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah, so it's really sad. It's, you know, one of the people that like, I guess she was 80, but I never thought of her as being that old. Like, it wasn't one of the people that you think, oh, we might lose them soon. So it was just sort of a surprise and, you know, very sad. And look, there's a lot of people who their knowledge of her goes back way further. Obviously, she's been acting for decades and decades. I'm not personally familiar with that, although a lot of people say that it's very good, but it is, you know, it's a big loss. Very sad.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Yesterday on the show, we implied that Fox and Friends' big predictions about how Joe Biden would probably pass away in the middle of yesterday's press conference were easy predictions to make, because if they were wrong, if he didn't do a bad job, if he didn't dribble all over himself, their audience would never know because they're not going to watch, and they're only going to experience a very limited cut down version of it that will be provided to them by, I predicted, Sean Hannity. I was a little bit off, but I want you to take a look at the follow up to yesterday's predictions today on Fox and Friends.
The best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you that you like to be able to. Anyway. We're ready to get a lot done. When I was United States Senator, Vice President, am I giving you too long an answer? Because if you don't want the detail. No, but I mean, I don't know how much detail you want about immigration. Okay, where am I here? Let me see.
Do you agree?
Yes.
If not, why not abolish it if it's a relic of the Jim Crow era?
And so I'm convinced that we'll be able to stop this because it is the most pernicious thing. This makes Jim Crow look like Jim Eagle. Successful electoral politics is the art of the possible. You got the right code for your credit card, you know. What was your dog's name? Okay, hang on. Sorry. Oh.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was kind of hard to watch at times. He did seem confused, no idea what he was talking about. I didn't understand what he was talking about. He rambled on until he apparently would occasionally either run out of gas or run out of words and then pause for a moment. You know, maybe he was searching for a new direction or a new word, couldn't find it, changed the subject. Ultimately, maybe he was just rusty. What was it, 65 days? He hasn't had a formal press conference, so maybe he should have done it earlier. But nonetheless, a lot of people are going, what was up with Joe yesterday?
Yeah, a lot of people are going, what is up with Joe? Or we really, really want people to be going, what's up with Joe? So we cut together this thing. Like, okay, Brett, so there were a couple of parts of that were, you know, like what Biden's been like for the past year, where he's either searching for something and doesn't get it or something. Some of that very tightly cut together thing was just him saying things that out of context sound weird, but like, I have no idea what the context is. You haven't provided it. So they weren't so, it's not like put bleach in your body where I don't care what the context is, that's crazy. That's like there's manipulation, and then there's really try hard, thirsty manipulation. I think that's what we saw right there.
Right. If I was producing that, I'd be like, so what does that, this is what you think about. What does your montage do? Is your montage telling us that he has lost it? Well, then you have to actually prove that. You can't just make up the proof by going through and just taking half of a sentence followed by another half of a different sentence. Like, it doesn't communicate that. I will say that some of what they did was genuinely funny, and there was like a successful montage in there somewhere when he's like losing his train of thought and rails off. They just ruin it by, for themselves, by putting in like that random question from the I think it's an NBC or CNN, Caitlin Collins. Yeah,
I don't even know what that was in there for.
Exactly.
That was just a question.
It was just there. So it's like, what are you guys doing? And it makes me so mad because they have like a vast teams at Fox and Friends to do this kind of stuff. And when you see a lazy montage like that, what it really actually does is just prove that they don't have to work hard. They just get to do, they've created this whole ecosystem. At Fox News, it's like those little terrariums that you don't eat, that don't seem like you have to water them or anything. It just is a self-sustaining cycle of fungus.
Exactly. Yeah. Like there's, as Wozni Lambre and I were saying yesterday, there's any number of different ways you can criticize Biden on the substance, but they don't want to engage with the substance because then you're acknowledging crises that Fox doesn't want to acknowledge. They don't want to acknowledge things having to do with wages, income inequality, access to health insurance, stuff like that. So they end up talking about nonsense, stuff that has nothing to do with Joe Biden, like Dr. Seuss, or the big problem with Biden is that he stumbles occasionally. Yes, he does stumble. It's a reason potentially, I guess, to go with younger politicians. But their issue fundamentally isn't with someone stumbling or rambling on, as they say. Yes, they'd never like a president who rambles like Donald Trump. Like Biden occasionally flames out a bit and doesn't know exactly what he wants to say. When Trump does that, he starts talking about backed up toilets and how you get cancer from windmills. That's worse, I would argue. And please criticize Joe Biden on the promises he hasn't kept. Like they could point out, as we do all the time, that he said he would cancel student loan debt and he hasn't done that. He hasn't explained why. But they don't want to make those criticisms because then they'd have to acknowledge that we have a crisis of student loan debt and that in theory the government could do something to fix that. They don't want either part of that equation. So instead, we get this nonsense.
Yeah, I think I'm paranoid that you were just throwing to a video right there because it sounded a little that.
No, sorry.
It's like take that too. Anyways, but my other favorite thing is Steve Ducey saying like he just rambles on as though he doesn't know what he's going to talk about next, and he's searching for a word and it doesn't make any sense. There's no structure there, and you're waiting for him to say, and that's my job.
Exactly.
My job here at Fox and Friends is to ramble about nothing for an hour and a half. And I do want to talk about the friends they have on Fox and Friends now. Rachel Campos Duffy is a reality show reject who is just basically like sucker fishing her way into relevance at every possible turn. And so is Will Cain. Will Cain is the absolute worst person on television. He's a journeyman freaking like guy who will say anything about any subject for you to hire him. He just came from ESPN and he is this darling. And I hate people who do that adaptation based on what show they're on. Jedediah Bila did it when she was on The View. She had one set of opinions she felt comfortable in view in expressing. But when she now is went back to Fox and Friends for a while, she turned into this like crazy conservative and she even got like the new hairdo to fit in at Fox. Will Kane, he puts on his whole act where he's now saying these like half thought through, like not really relevant attack lines from the conservative Twitter sphere. And it's just garbage.
It is 100%. Ugh. Anyway, get ready for a lot of it because they're not gonna, like they don't have some of the specific stuff about Obama. As Wozniak was talking about yesterday, they don't want to engage on the substance. Like the closest they can get is something like immigration. Even then, they have to tread carefully to not acknowledge the sort of human aspect of the crisis. It just has to be about numbers and crossing and stuff, which we'll get to. But
and it's not anyway. Even, it's just one last thing. Right, it's not even consistent. Like Hannity today was saying, or on his show after the press conference, Hannity was saying that Biden was too prepared.
I know. Well, so there's nothing that he can do, and they say that the entire thing was scripted, or they say, you know, he referred to his notes too much. Now, let's get all of our criticism about his binder of answers out of the way before Kayleigh McEnany joins us, because that would be awkward. But yeah, and no president ever has notes that they have printed that they then Sharpie all over. No president would ever do that. It just the whole thing is every politician goes back to canned answers. Ted Cruz may not have notes. But you can see in real time his little possum brain trying to work out what answer he'd like, well, what question he'd like to answer rather than one you just gave him. That's just the way politics works. It's awful, but it isn't Biden's invention. Over the past month or so, we've been covering the literally hundreds of voter suppression bills that have been working their way through a number of different state legislatures. Well, now several of them have actually passed, including most recently in Georgia, which had one of the worst. And why wouldn't it? They had a lot of voting and participation in the last election, so can't have that. So Republican Governor Brian Kemp on Thursday signed into a law a sweeping voting measure that will do a lot of things. Now, if you've been watching this, you already know the show for a while, you already know all of this. But it imposes new identification requirements for those casting ballots by mail, curtails the use of drop boxes for absentee ballots, allows electors to challenge the eligibility of an unlimited number of voters, and requires counties to hold hearings on such challenges within 10 days, makes it a crime for third-party groups to hand out food and water to voters standing in line, which is like the most specific, perfectly needlessly cruel thing I've ever seen in any piece of legislation, not just voting legislation. You are giving up the game when you target snacks. But anyway,
John is not having it. They came for the water and I said nothing, but then they came for the snacks. And there was no one there to defend the snackers.
You can't say it's about election security when you're like, no, make them go thirsty. That has nothing to do. It's not like I would rig the election, but I'm too weak from lack of carbs. Now I can't. Mission accomplished. That's not how it works. They're just trying to stop people from voting. They want to make the lines really long and they want to make the people quit the lines because they're thirsty or hungry. It's madness. But it also blocks the use of mobile voting vans, as Fulton County did last year after purchasing two vehicles at a cost of more than $700,000. The reason they want to ban those is because voting vans are convenient and lead to more voting. They also prevent local governments from directly accepting grants from the private sector. Now, that's all stuff that we've talked about. I want to briefly add in a little bit that I'm not 100% sure we have talked about and is perhaps even more insidious because of the sort of umbrella effect it'll have over the implementation and enforcement of all of what we've already talked about. The 95-page law also strips authority from the Secretary of State, making him a non-voting member of the state election board, and allows lawmakers to initiate takeovers of local election boards. Measures that critics said could allow partisan appointments to slow down or block election certification or target heavily Democratic jurisdiction. Like, we just went through this whole election. We know all of what happened with Raffensperger and all of that. Now they're like, oh yeah, that was inconvenient, made it harder to steal the election. So he's gone. Also, we're in charge now. It doesn't matter if this is an area that's overwhelmingly Democratic. We, the state legislature, get to decide what actually happens there. So this is going to be really fun for future elections, Brett.
Yeah, so essentially they're outlining, they've just told us what is too ridiculous for them to do. They're like, the Raffensperger basically said, listen, I'm the Secretary of State of Georgia. I know how to suppress the vote. I know, and I did it in a way that was very successful for many, many years. And the only thing that could devastate my voter suppression laws is the pandemic. And people basically coming to the realization that, oh my God, you can only vote for 5 hours on a Tuesday. That's ridiculous. So we had other ways that we drove people out there to go vote. Ways that should, that if they're illegal in Georgia, that's only because the Republicans in Georgia realize that that helps give them an edge. Because when they ratified the Constitution, black people were only responsible for 3/5 of a person and they couldn't even vote. They're trying to be like, so what tricks did we use back in the day that kept these folks from actually expressing democracy? And so they're just trotting those out and shoring those up. So all the things that when Raffensperger said, like, listen, I'd get sued and lose a court case if I actually pursued these things Trump wants me to pursue, he's just saying, that was it. It was just the court case problem. Let's change the law so that, and not just Raffensperger, but the legislation specifically said, got it, heard ya, cool dog whistle. We're gonna fix all those laws so that we'll win the court case next time.
Yeah. Well, yes, and so totally right about Raffensperger. I wanna focus briefly on Kemp because he's the one who's actually signing this. So it passed party line vote. Totally cool. By the way, all the Republicans across the country are saying HR1 would make elections like unacceptable or whatever while they're all trying to pass like insane legislation. But so Kemp signed it, saying in a news conference, quote, Georgia will take another step towards ensuring our elections are secure, accessible, and fair, which sounds good, right? I mean, if you don't know what's going on, you think, oh good, now Kemp he wants secure elections. We just went through like a 3-month period where Brian Kemp was the target of how much ire from Donald Trump and other Republicans about how he wasn't overthrowing the election. And he kept saying, there's nothing I can do and there's nothing, what would I do? We had a secure election. He said that over and over and over again. If he could have overthrown it, he would have. Dude does not care about democracy. Research how he got into office in the first place. But there was nothing they could do because it was a fair and secure election. But now, well, now we'll be getting a fair and secure election once we stop some of these people of particular sorts from voting. So incredibly fake, incredibly frustrating. There's some nice symbolism here though. As they pass this incredibly racist voter suppression bill, many people have noted the nice symbolism of, you could see here his tweet of how happy he is that they signed it. He's under a print of Callaway Plantation, which when you're gonna have a white Republican governor try to stop black people from voting, why not have him appear under a portrait of a plantation? That sort of works.
It's so crazy. And it's worth noting that, yes, I talked about current Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger making certain decisions, but then we transition to former Secretary of State of Georgia, Brian Kemp, who basically paved his way to the governorship and positive sentiment from Republican voters and legislators by doing these exact kind of voter suppression rules. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And they're never being honest when they say they want people to vote. I think as Cenk pointed out yesterday on the show, they've started saying, like, don't mention democracy. Democracy, when Republicans, when you say we want democracy, they now are saying, no, we want a republic.
Totally.
Basically saying they want the equivalent of Jim Crow, which this is, which Biden called them out for yesterday and other people have as well. But Fox and Friends is like, isn't it weird how he said Crow?
Exactly. And we're going to play that. So we will get to that. As Brian Kemp was passing this incredibly racist, incredibly voter suppression-y bill, some were still trying to fight against them. One of those individuals is Representative Park Cannon, who you'll see in this video, literally being arrested and hauled off for trying to knock on the governor's door.
Yeah, you said you gave her one more time, like you're gonna do something. Are you serious?
No, you are not.
She's not under arrest.
What? For what? Under arrest for what?
Why are you under arrest?
for trying to see something that our governor is doing? Our governor is signing a bill that affects all Georgians, and you're going to arrest an elected representative.
Yeah. So they hauled her off. We're going to have some tweets from Representative Cannon after that. But she knocked on the door. The cop was told over and over, the cops, I should say, because they brought in more, that she was a lawmaker. They hauled her off. And you know, really fast, we have this little set of a perfect representative images of what's happening and the racial political context of what's happening. This image, which was posted by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, really sums up what Georgia's approach to politics in the modern day is. Oh, bunch of people got involved, great work by activists, huge political participation, resulting in political representation that is for once a little bit more representative of what the state is actually like. Well, we're going to get a couple of white cops to drag away the black lawmaker. They're making it a little bit obvious.
This imagery is just so dripping with irony, symbolism, too much reality in every possible way. Juxtapose that image to certain police officers pulling back the gate so that the rioters could get into the Capitol building. Yeah. Also, just from the perspective of police officers themselves, like this is one lawmaker. So they're saying, listen, black person. This is what Georgia is saying. Listen, black person. They kind of give you this idea that there's ways you can go about affecting your own life. And one of those is to take part in democracy. When black people vote, they get mad. And the thing that makes them the maddest is that this black person, this uppity black person had the gall to even get close to the pen that is disenfranchising her. That she became a representative. That's it. That's what kicks in. If not for those cops in the doorway, which I'm pretty certain watching it happen, he's like, all right, I'll show you. But definitely for the people watching, the white people in Georgia who looked at it and said, this ain't our state no more. And by God, we're gonna make it our state again. Like that's what's happening right now.
Yeah. Well, she eventually was released and tweeted, hey everyone, thank you for your support. I've been released from jail. I am not the first Georgian to be arrested for fighting voter suppression. I'd love to say I'm the last, but we know that isn't true. And I mean, what are you supposed to do? I guess you keep working as lots of awesome individuals and groups have been doing, but it's really hard to change these laws. If to do so, you have to get the majority, and the laws make it really difficult to get the majority. Oh, in theory, maybe even if they couldn't get the majority in the state house, if they had the governor's seat, then they could have stopped the signing of this sort of thing. Oh, wait, Brian Kemp he suppressed the vote to make himself governor. It all works really well. They do it once to get him, that allows them to sign legislation like this, making it harder in the future. So we have two Democratic senators in Georgia. Will we in 6 years? Less than 6 years, actually, because there are special elections. I don't know. Hopefully, work will continue. The passion of the voters will remain. But this legislation has made it, perhaps in hindsight, eventually measurably more difficult to maintain the now more representative representation that they have in Georgia.
And bear in mind factors that go into your, like you can eliminate the filibuster and still be up a creek, right? Because state districts, so the districts that dictate the drawing of district lines that dictate what's happening in the US Congress are based on what state legislatures decide. And those state legislatures, essentially, the Republicans in the South have Jim Crowed their way into essentially making everything, all the representative districts, wildly unrepresentative of the people who vote them.
HR1 does have a component of setting up nonpartisan boards to manage redistricting. It's incredibly complex. Who knows if that would even last through it, but that is a great concern. That's a very important concern.
How long would it take to have that take effect?
And decade,
to what it, right, exactly. And so essentially, I mean, let's look at the timeline. You put this into motion, you eliminate the filibuster. It's still a messed up thing. You got a close Senate, you've got a close House of Representatives. Always when there's a new administration, the numbers swinged in the other direction. So they could, as it's learning to walk, cut its legs off. Like that's what they would do. And now they've got the filibusters gone. What are we gonna do? In the meantime, let's just shore up every little bit of it and make it even harder than it is by virtue of the design of the Senate for democracy to have any representation in the government in a way that's meaningful, that would protect the rights of people.
Yeah, exactly. Donald Trump was back on Fox News last night and he wanted to continue to make clear two things. One, that he doesn't trust Dr. Fauci, doesn't think you should. And two, this isn't what he said, but it's sort of lurking between every line, how continued jealous he is of Dr. Fauci. Take a look.
Get it? You saw him throw out the first pitch in Washington, right? He is a better pitcher than he is at what he does, but he's a great promoter. But I got along with him. It was right. But if you really look, I didn't really listen to him too much because I was doing the opposite of what he was saying. But I mean, frankly, if he were known as somebody that was with me all the way, he wouldn't be popular with the media. He's just a media creation.
Okay, so really fast, he said, if you look into it, I did the opposite of what he said. Well, I looked into it. It turns out he did do the opposite. And let's take a look at the results for that. Coronavirus cases in the US as of right now, 30,780,000 with damn near 560,000 deaths. Yes, Trump, we know you did the opposite of what the doctors said, and we are still experiencing the consequences of that to this day.
It's just like an admission. Like, no one should listen to what Trump is bragging about and say that that's a good way to behave. No one should just do something because someone else tells them to. Trump is pegging success. I just love to say Trump is pegging, but Trump is pegging success in the coronavirus crisis to whether someone agrees with what Trump says every time. That's just not a way that any successful manager or person running anything should be. You should have a bunch of people chiming in, and when it makes sense to do something because it's the right thing to do, that's what should drive you. Not because I like that person and they told me to. And then again, Trump being like, I forget who I can't talk about other people. So even I need to talk about myself. So even when I'm mentioning other people, I need to talk about them the way I would talk about myself. Be like, he's a great promoter. It's like, dude, that's the only thing you're good at. The only thing
it's all projection.
It's not like you're Trump good at science. You're Trump good at policy. You're good at making a decision quickly without even thinking most of the time, and then sticking to it no matter how dumb it is, because you realize that if you just message, not even consistently, but really just a lot, then and not give the media enough time to come up with new ideas about what you're like, then it doesn't matter really electorally and public opinion wise how you perform. You've just divided America into two tribes. And you just try to keep the one tribe of yours happy enough and big enough to win elections, but not even that saved you from November or whatever it was.
Brett's right. That's the substance. This is far away from the substance, is how he started that clip, which is, you remember when he threw out that pitch? I just thought, oh God, don't talk about the pitch, dude. Come on. I hate your guts, but even I, like, don't do that. That's just so sad. That's so sad. You're gonna find this as unbearable as I say it, as my wife did. But I had a talk with my wife about one of the reasons that I find conversation, especially with strangers, to be uncomfortable sometimes, which is I have what I think of as a special, it's not a superpower, it's more of a weakness, where I feel like I pick up on the subtext of what people are trying to accomplish in conversation more than most people do, and more than the people saying it would want you to. See, I told you this would be unbearable. And very often people like really want things when they're talking or need things, and I get repelled by that sometimes. But you don't need that power to read this with Trump. He's so jealous of that stupid pitch from like a year ago. That was so long ago, dude. Don't bring it up. Brett, have you ever been like passed over for something and somebody else got it? Can you imagine if you still talked about it years later? You bring it up?
What he did in the moment was insane. Remember? He then, after it was announced that Fauci got a first pitch, Trump was like, well, actually, I'm going to throw out the pitch in New York at the game and I'll be there. And the entire organization was like, wait, what? No, you're not. No, you're not. You just lied. They're like, we invited you a couple years ago, but that's not like a standing invite. That's like not like when someone asks you to come to their like going away party, you can't just show up at their house 2 years later and be like, you invited me once. What is he's basically admitting he's a vampire. Like, you asked me, you invited me one time. Yeah. I can come suck you, you know, just leech off you forever.
Yeah. Warning so to bad. The MLB, let the right one in. At yesterday's Joe Biden press conference, he brought up the recent spate of voter suppression that we've seen and had an interesting rhetorical spin on it.
Legislatures across the country are working to pass bills that would restrict voting.
What I'm worried about is how un-American this whole initiative is. It's sick. We'll be able to stop this because it is the most pernicious thing. This makes Jim Crow look like Jim Eagle.
I don't like.
Someone and in it's the a Jim like, Albatross around our necks, and no. We can't be like Jim Ostrich and bury our Jim heads in the Jim sand. Am I still doing this right?
Yes. Okay. I get what he's saying, and he's right on the substance. It just, you know, sometimes you try something, it doesn't work. We use dumb analogies all the time. But anyway, that clip that you just saw was teed up by Laura Ingraham to Donald Trump to comment on. And here is what he had to say. We're gonna show this to you, but I want you to watch Laura Ingraham's face and see as she increasingly gets less interested in what he's saying slash concerned about where he might be headed. Take a look.
Jim Crow showing a vote, yeah. Showing an ID to vote is Jim Crow? Your reaction to that offensive comparison, Mr. President.
Well, Jim Crow is their most often used term over the last 3 weeks. I notice it's constantly being used, but they're trying to get something with no voter ID, no signature verification, send all the ballots you can. You'll never have another fair election in this country. Just like if you look at the last election, it was disgraceful. It was a third world election. What they did was absolutely disgraceful. And if you look at the numbers were vastly in favor of us in the presidential election. It was disgraceful that they were able to get away with it. The Supreme Court didn't have the courage to do what they had to do.
Speaking as a lawyer, we're not going to relitigate the past tonight, but speaking as a lawyer, I mean, I think going forward, I think any candidate running for office has to have a impeccable legal strategy in place. But I want to ask you about
the courts did not want to enforce it. You know that, Laura. You know exactly that. And the Supreme Court, when you had Texas and 18 states, the Supreme Court said they don't have standing. The Supreme Court didn't want to hear it.
And a lot of Republicans
on that
Supreme Court
didn't
want
to make a decision like they know they had to make.
So they didn't
have the courage to do what they had to do.
Well, moving forward, I have to ask you about this embarrassing meeting between Biden officials and the Chinese delegation.
Brett, she's like halfway through. She's like, don't relitigate. No, come on, don't. Moving forward, it's like how I was talking to Brett earlier. Not happy with him.
I think the Freudian slip here was litigate because you're getting sued by Dominion for $1.6 billion. It's like that is a producer in the ear going like, we're getting sued. Shut him up. Shut him up.
It just hit 1.7. There's a ticker. It's going up.
That's funny. Exactly. Like the deficit clock that they put in Times Square or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just the Dominion lawsuit clock that keeps ticking up.
It's like, it's the news of the morning that they're suing us. Shut up, Trump, shut up. We have to have you here because, and I could see it on her face. This guy's really popular with our audience, so we got to have him on. But oh God, is he boring? He's boring and potentially financially very dangerous to us. Please stop, Trump. Please stop.
So let's go through like his criticisms of the strategy, right? So first of all, his idea that his get out of jail free card is like they keep saying Jim Crow. So that's a problem. Them saying Jim Crow, they said Jim Crow, their argument is invalid. The logic here is if I punch you in the face, and you in any way reference that you are getting punched or something is happening to your face, it's your fault now. And I get to keep doing it. And it's actually, you're kind of a jerk for mentioning that I am punching you in the face. Like, that is an insane argument. And the other insane argument that he has is, listen, if you're running for president, you gotta have a, if you're a candidate now, you have to have an impeccable legal team. Buddy, how about you have an impeccable platform full of policy positions and messaging strategies that actually appeal to enough voters for you to win? Like, what you should do is look at a statewide election that yields vastly different results from your like gerrymandered representative district elections. And you need to, that's what they need to do. That's why they're doing it, is because the victories of Ossoff and Warnock expose exactly the problem with gerrymandered politics. Mm-hmm. And the same holds for the Electoral College versus the popular vote.
Yeah, and they ran very substantive campaigns. Not necessarily the exact one that I would have wanted to, but very focused on the actual crises and all of that. Yeah, and you're 100% right. Run a campaign with a platform. That would be great, especially for president, dude. But anyway, if you're not gonna do that, the idea that you need competent legal representation. And to say more about this, I bring in the guy from the Borat movie. Like, you have there's a competition going on right now. Who's being sued more, Trump or his legal team? I don't know. They're both being sued for billions. But anyway, really fast, as Brett pointed out, Dominion is now suing Fox News for $1.6 billion. And you might be thinking, wait, you said that this is news. We already knew that they were being sued. No. That was by Smartmatic voting systems. They were suing Fox for $2.7 billion. Fox News, Lou Dobbs, Maria Bartiromo, Jeanine Pirro, who as soon as she sobers up, she's going to be shocked by this news, as well as Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell, everybody basically. So yeah, multiple multi-billion dollar lawsuits. Who knows if it's going to result in anything? I don't have particularly high hopes. But it has, at the very least, considering that Newsmax and OAN are being sued too, it has led them to be a little bit more cautious about letting on some people to make certain particular claims about the election. And she was clearly worried that Trump was about to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's insane. And then along the way, just misrepresenting any law that exists in the meantime. He's like, they don't want any signatures. It's like the audit that they did that confirmed you lost was a signature audit.
Yep.
Multiple times. It was the police. It was like the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. Like it was the thin blue line that was like, that's a bridge too far. Like all of that. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah. I hate to break it to you, but you lost. And it's so crazy that people can look at Trump going on shows like Laura Ingraham and saying stuff like this with not even his face, like not even getting the video feed. It's just some deranged lunatic in a bathrobe walking around a golden room or maybe sitting on a golden toilet, like complaining about he lost. They can listen to that and visualize that and think of it as anything but pathetic. Mm-hmm. That's even more pathetic.
Yeah. One topic that came up on the appearance of Donald Trump, Laura Ingraham, was the attack on the Capitol in January. Here's what Trump had to say about that.
It was a zero threat. Right from the start, it was zero threat. Look.
Okay, so zero threat. He goes on to talk in... You remember the day of the weird things he had to say about how he loved them and they were very special. He talked in the interview with Laura Ingraham about how the rioters were hugging and kissing Capitol police officers. He said, hugging and kissing.
Some of them went in and they're hugging and kissing the police and the guards. You know, they had great relationships. A lot of people were waved in and then they walked in and then they walked out. Direct quote.
That's a good Mulaney.
Former, yeah. They walked in with their high feminine hips and then they walked right out. Like that is.
Yes, there were some rioters who felt very comfortable with the cops. And then there were also rioters who tried to beat the cops to death, who tried to crush them indoors. We saw video of them with a flag trying to beat a cop to death. That is not a hug. That is not a kiss. It is very different. And so 2 months out, facing a continued investigation about how he might have incited that violence. And the Republican Party trying to be very careful afterward, distance themselves and, you know, imply that it wasn't them at all. I mean, remember, like half of Republicans believe that the people who are hugging and kissing cops were Antifa. Trump is still speaking very favorably about them, even though the audience watching that show thinks that they were lefties that were doing this. That is the takeaway. And so as we've been saying since like January 7th, man, I can't wait to see what people are gonna think about that attack in a year. What the lingering beliefs about that are going to be. We already know, just a couple months out, how solidified the insane misinformation is on the right when it comes to that attack.
Yeah, and they don't care. They don't care about reality. They haven't figured out, man. And they're just gonna go about it, their business until the next go around or until someone forces them to. And they did for a second, like Newsmax and OAN with Trump on social media, then like that's very key here is Trump is not on social media to send people to OAN and Newsmax when they don't take Trump's call. Now they're back in a position of power where the only way that Trump can talk to that group who hasn't quite figured out where OAN is to call into Laura Ingraham.
Yeah, exactly. It's the end of the week and so it's time to take out the trash. Got your garbage can ready, everybody. I got mine. We've got some garbage for you. But first up, Brett, who's your garbage person of the week?
My garbage person of the week is Lauren Cornelius Boebert, representative from Colorado, who
I didn't know that was her middle name.
No, I made it up. So neither did she. She will never miss an opportunity to make a really, really stupid point about guns in America. Here's one.
Colorado does have some of the most strictest gun laws. We have just about everything that Democrats are wanting to push nationally. And unfortunately, our state is showing that these do not work. Chicago is showing that gun laws do not work. And every time something like this happens, there's more knee-jerk reactions to legislate law-abiding citizens and restrict them from being able to defend themselves. In America, we see more deaths by hand, fist, feet, even hammers. And, you know, are we going to start legislating that away? Are we going to be like these other countries who even ban knives? I mean, if hammers are the cause of more deaths than firearms, then maybe we need to start having background checks on hammers. I mean, look out, Black and Decker. We're already coming after manufacturers for firearms. Maybe you're next.
I love that she makes essentially a slippery slope argument. And the slope on which that argument is based itself just flies out from under her. It's one of those things where like, if you're plagued with doing enough research to understand the point that they're trying to make, but you know that they don't have to be smart enough to make that point and their audience isn't interested in them having any logical consistency whatsoever. What she's trying to say, here's the modicum of truth, is that if you combine people who are killed with blunt objects in America,
yes.
That number is bigger than the number of people in 3 years ago who were killed by rifles specifically, okay? Mm-hmm. Rifles specifically. So that's like saying, listen, and so what she ends up saying is that she gets rid of that argument and she then focuses on hammers. That is one portion of a large category of things. She singles that out and says hammers, when hammers are probably responsible for maybe like 9 to 100 deaths a year. And then she makes a huge mistake saying that hammers are responsible for more deaths than all firearms. No. There's thousands of deaths from handguns every year. There's thousands of deaths from handguns plus all other kinds of firearms. Your argument makes absolutely no sense. But I love how at the beginning she's like, she is combining a bunch of stuff together. She's like, she doesn't get her own point. If more people die from hammers and guns and feet and shoes and lightning. And it's like, yeah, if you combine every kind of way to die together, you'll eventually get to a number that is higher than the thing you need a stat to be higher than.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, if her point was right, like, when you make a point, think about, wait, what if this was true? What if 50,000 people a year were being killed by hammers? I think we would and should look into that, actually, if that was the case. I would be fascinated to find out why that was the case. It's of course not. It's a terrible point. She doesn't even understand it. She doesn't, again, you understand your points and care if the points you're making are true when you care about the substance of the argument. When you don't, when fundamentally you're not here for the facts, you're here to protect an industry, then what does she care if the point that she's making is true or not? She doesn't know, she doesn't care. It is interesting, as many people have pointed out, that her background is far less gun, like chock full of guns as it that it used to be. I'm sure that's going to come back at some point. It's, you know, like it's a particularly kind of cowardly thing. Like, I don't think Marjorie Greene would have stripped all the rifles out of her background, out of her, like, her set that's doing cosplay from like an Al Qaeda like promotional video from 15 years ago. But she stripped it out because of the shooting, even though we have mass shootings all the time in Colorado. What, like, were you not offended by the last big mass shooting in Colorado? Like, screw that one, but this one's enough to get rid of my guns.
It's even anyway, grosser than
for
that.
For a lot of reasons, she's garbage.
It's even grosser than that, because she, for that thing, that shoot you're talking about, for lack of a better term, she added them for one thing.
Totally.
Just and then just the last,
like, piled guns.
Yeah, like, it doesn't fit, man. I get it. It's a little too much. It's like Brian Kemp when he had all the guns behind him pointed at a child in one of his ads. And I just, there's one more tweet that's hilarious. I only have one little observation about. Here's what Lauren Boebert said about AR-15s and voting. She tweeted essentially this thing that was, liberals keep saying it's easier to buy a gun than it is to vote, but I don't seem to remember when the government sent me an AR-15 in the mail. I love when they think they've got it. It's like, come back to me when you can only buy guns for 5 hours during a work day on a Tuesday every 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's like, and we're working to make it even harder.
Yeah,
like,
and I'm actually working to pass a bill, Brett, that if there's a line going into a gun show and people hand out water, I'm sending those people to prison.
So
you don't get to feed or water the gun lovers. Anyway, so the whole thing's ridiculous. Okay, that's some good garbage though. For my garbage person of the week, I have this individual who has often been my garbage person. Yes. It's Ted Cruz, and he is going directly in the trash. Ted Cruz could have earned it for a lot of different reasons. I love that photo of him. A lot of different reasons this week, but I just want to show you why he's garbage. Take a look at this.
So it's past midnight. I'm standing on the shore of the Rio Grande. The water is right behind me. We're at the edge of the river. On the other side of the river is Mexico. The other side of the river we have been listening to and seeing cartel members, human traffickers, right on the other side of the river, waving flashlights, yelling and taunting Americans, taunting the Border Patrol.
Okay, first of all, on the other side is the Rio Grande. First of all, prove it. That could be his backyard. Yeah, I have exactly. No idea where that is. You're standing next to a bush. And they even did like this, this video isn't dynamic enough. Put a bush over his shoulder.
That's like foliage.
It looks like he's in the front yard and Honey, I Shrunk the Ted. Like, it just looks like. It looks like
an oatmeal pie. I'm definitely down by the Rio Grande here. I wasn't just driving through a park, saw some fake tall grass and pulled over. Don't quote me on this. So ridiculous. Yeah.
So there's a lot that's great about that. One is that, like, he put on a vest. Because he's going into like dangerous wilderness or whatever. Dude, you're just next to a bush. And where did you get that vest? Someone said that he looked like Brooks Brothers Bear Grylls. And the thing is, like, he's keeping his voice low because it's dangerous, but he's still got to do his little fake way of talking. Like, he can't even get out of that mode for 2 seconds.
He only does that because he's not smart enough to come up with all the words in a row quickly. He's just buying time.
Slow. Sure.
Yeah. I do want to point out something else that makes him garbage. And if we have access to Playout B, I definitely need to show this shirt that was tweeted out by Ted Cruz, telling people if they are down, get your spring break Ted Cruz t-shirts today. McConnell in the front, MAGA in the back.
Yeah. Now, you might think, who would wear that? There are some good reasons. If you want a really good fallback excuse for why you're not getting laid on spring break, wear that shirt. Great excuse for nobody being interested in you.
It's so funny because he's basically like, do you need to remind people that you went to Cancun? Is that what you want to do?
Well, and doesn't the video kind of seem like they made me leave Mexico, but I think I found a way across that river. I think I can get back here. And really fast. Well, this is garbage because he's making a mockery of the situation at the border, which he pretends to care about but doesn't care about. He's not interested in what actually happens to these people. Remember that this is also the same week that he accused Democrats of playing ridiculous theater in proposals following mass shootings. Yes, the Democrats are playing ridiculous theater. I just want you to remember this screenshot of this sad, sorry little man posing next to a bush. It's supposedly so close to the car. Tails. It's right across the river.
Heidi locked me out, and luckily I found a passing film crew, student filmmakers. And I decided, why not point into the darkness? There's my integrity. You can't see it.
You can't see it's in the dark. Can we bring back the screenshot of him? It's like, have you ever walked like into your backyard and you see a possum? And it's like, it's right there.
And it looks back at you.
Same experience. No,
he's equally scared of you. He's not dangerous. He was more scared than you are.
Yes, here's a wax figure playing deader. Anyway. Okay, great job, Ted. If I empty this out, and eventually I will have to because it's getting very heavy and full, there's a lot of Ted Cruz in here. He is consistently garbage. Anyway, let's make sure that we also let you know about the third garbage person of the week. And that was determined by the TDR community, as it is every week on our community tab. 29,000 of you voted, producing these five bits of political garbage. Coming in at number five, 9% of the vote, you have Meghan McCain for failing to grasp her own hypocrisy.
Really?
That should have been ranked even higher. At number four, 11% of the vote, you have Kylie Jenner for asking others to donate to a friend's GoFundMe, which sounds like a ridiculous reason for a person to be on this list, but it bears out. Anyway, number three, 15% of the vote, you have Chip Roy for his lynching comments during a hate crimes hearing. That is a great one. I don't think we actually got to that on the show, but that is a great one. Number two, at 19%, of the vote, you have Sidney Powell for recycling the right's reasonable person defense. The thing where, well, nobody could have possibly believed the insane things I was saying, so you can't sue me. But even that doesn't rise to the level of community garbage person of the week. That is reserved for the NRA at 46% of the vote for their usual BS following a mass shooting. Bunch of people got shot up and they tweeted the Second Amendment. It's so amazing. But I guess in their defense, they're getting paid pretty well to do this. So thank you to all of you who voted. Thank you, Brett, for joining us on the Damage Report as always.
Great to be here. Catch more John later today at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time as he's joined by Cenk Uygur and David Schuster to discuss a whole host of topics that are of great import to the American discourse and experiment.
I like that actually. Let's use that for an ad. Anyway, thank you, Brett. Thank you everybody for watching. Great to have you here. It was a good week. We had two awesome new co-hosts that I can't wait to have back on. Amanda and Wozni did a great job. Hope that you really enjoyed that. Lots coming up for next week. And until then, stay safe out there. Stay sane out there. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.